about so big, about so small, about this length, about this width, about this flow, about this gift. Instinct Lee and me right up your alleyway. Skip the Moet, let's chill with some Alizé. Enough stress in our day. Let me massage your mind as my mental starts to play.
Hi, my name is Pablo, and this is
The Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don.
Thank you so much for providing the intro and outro this week, Noah. Make sure you follow him on Instagram at 757Noah. This is a very special week for us here, and that's because it's the first deep dive episode of the Back Catalog Podcast. The podcast is also accompanied by a Spotify and Apple Music playlist linked in the description if you're interested in any of the songs featured in this episode. For the first episode, we're going to dive deep into one of the most prolific stars of the 90s. She's a Grammy Award winner, Broadway, television, and movie actress, and part of one of the most well-known families in music. Some people know her from Moesha, but I personally know her as the vocal Bible, Brandi Norwood. So let's dive in. Brandi was born in Macomb, Mississippi, but was raised in Carson, California, and she would get her singing start in church under the direction of her father, who was actually the choir director. Brandi's career started as a background vocalist in 1990 for the boy band Immature, and during that time, she had also auditioned and shopped around at different labels to get signed, but most of them denied her because she was only 11 at the time, and so they didn't want to sign someone so young. But in 1993, she ended up signing a deal with Atlantic Records after she auditioned for the director of A&R, Daryl Williams. And as soon as she signed the deal, Brandi's mother quit her job and became her manager. While she was working on her first album, Brandi landed her first television show role on the show Thea as the titular character's daughter. While the show did initially show some high ratings, it quickly fell off, causing it to be canceled after just one season. Brandi said she was actually really happy about this because she wanted to focus on music, and that was her main concern at the time. So, because of all that, in 1994, Brandi ended up dropping her self-titled debut at the age of just 15. And honestly, I've got to say, this is probably one of the best debut albums ever, in my opinion. The album is truly a masterclass in how to discuss young teenage love, but without making it sound completely juvenile. This album plays just as well in 2021 as it did in 1994. The writing on this album is truly a testament to Brandi's youth while she was recording it. The production of this album is really what makes it such a generational bending album. Brandi linked up with Keith Crouch, who is the son of Andre Crouch, who is a gospel singer and choir director. And at the time, Keith was actually relatively unknown and ready to prove himself to the world. He actually ended up working on over 50% of the album, and four of the five songs he produced would end up being the singles for the album. What Keith Crouch was able to do with this album is nothing short of phenomenal. He actually was able to create a funk, soul, and hip-hop sound that matched perfectly with not only the time and the sound of the 90s, but also Brandi's voice. Brandi has such a raspy and sultry sound to her voice, and while the production never overpowered her, it was just as strong and present and important to adding the extra punch to her unique vocal style. The production is what made this album transcend the teenage market. It sounded like something an adult singer would have been singing at the time. Tracks like Baby, I Wanna Be Down, and Best Friend best capture the essence of this first album. The hard bass lines and the piano layers that sit directly under Brandi's vocals show just how polished, put together, and methodical this thing was crafted specifically for Brandi and her voice. While the singles are definitely the standout tracks of this album, songs like Sunny Days and Always On My Mind only helped to solidify that Brandi had the ability and potential to be a force in the industry. While this album by no means is perfect, Moving On was not the best album opener by any means at all. It's still a really solid way to start out your career, especially with how easily replayable this has always been. It, however, was by no means an indicator of what would come for Brandi or the impact she would go on to have in the industry, but this definitely planted the seeds in everyone's mind that she could be the girl. And I think it's important to note here that at this time, she also was going head-to-head with Aaliyah, and who had dropped her own first album at the age of 15, I believe, in also 1994 or late 93. So Atlantic was trying to do something very different with Brandi, and I think on this album they were able to do it. I think adding Keith Crouch, who was relatively unknown, and you'll see that Brandi starts developing relationships with people who sometimes are unknown and end up making her sound way different than anything is out, because she dared to work with people who didn't necessarily have years and years of professional experience, but did have the creative drive and the will and want to be different. And I think that's the main thing to remember about Brandy. She never wants to sound like anyone else. She wants to be different. She wants to craft her sound in a way that's different than anything we've heard. So in between album one and two, Brandy did do a few things, but like nothing too crazy. Unless you include becoming the titular character on the hit show Moesha, which would go on to become one of the greatest sitcoms in UPN history. She also contributed to two little soundtracks for two little movies. It's nothing big. One of them is actually my all-time favorite Brandy song. It's Sitting Up in My Room for this little movie called Waiting to Excel and the soundtrack in 1995. The track was actually written and produced by Babyface, who wanted to keep it funky, and he made it a funk bass track. And at the time, Babyface was literally a hit-making machine, okay? This song maintained Brandy's good girl image while capturing the idea of crushing hard on someone. Again, it was a perfect balance between innocent lyrics with adult production. And the song would go on to reach the number two spot on the Billboard Hot 100. Then the other song she did was actually a collaboration with the singer Tamia and Chaka Khan for the Gary F. Gray directed 1996, very small, very unknown film called Set It Off. She would also, in the same span between the first and second album, go on to do a remake of Cinderella, which we know is not important at all. And it would include an all-star ensemble cast with the likes of Whoopi Goldberg and Whitney Houston being in it. And to this day, Impossible is probably one of the best soundtrack songs to ever be created. During this time period, there was literally no escaping Brandy, and she had become the girl. But by no means was she done with her own music or showing the world exactly what she had to offer. So we get to 1998, and Brandy releases her second full-length album, Never Say Never. On this record, she decided to take a different direction than the first. While she kept her innocence lyrically, sonically, she opted to begin her descent into the futuristic world. Wouldn't be fully actualized or realized until her fourth album, but Never Say Never is where the foundation began to be laid. Having felt like she had reached a new level of maturity, both emotionally and vocally, since her first album, Brandy wanted the album to reflect who she was in 1998. So she asked her label to actually work with Missy Elliott and Timbaland, but given that they had just produced One in a Million for Aaliyah, whose first project came out at the same time as Brandy at the age of 15, the label Atlantic, they was like, no. So instead, she would link up with Rodney Jerkins, who we all know as Darkchild, who had produced for artists like Joe, Vanessa Williams, and Mary J. Blige in the past. In the late 90s, Darkchild brought this dark, hauntingly emotional vibe to music and made them into R&B masterpieces that sounded like nothing else. Known for his trademark record scratches in the pre-chorus, Darkchild took this energy and pumped it through Brandy's second album to create a sound that previously had never been experienced by listeners. This is where I started to realize that Brandy really was an empty vessel for producers to get their unique stylings across with. Brandy became that artist that you work with if you really want your production to be just as important as the vocals. Never Say Never explores more topics like Brandy's newfound fame on singles like Top of the World, which features one of the best Mace verses I literally have ever heard. The album is obviously most well known for its Grammy Award winning duet with Monica in The Boy Is Mine, which is a mid-tempo song where the two women fight over the love and affection of a man. This song is literally one of the best pick-me anthems I've ever heard and ever to be written. And it was gonna be the beginning of a very long and one of the most interesting feuds in music history. But the intimate feel as the track starts with the chimes and the acoustic plucking takes the song to the next level, in my opinion. The way both of them were able to bounce off each other as if they were actually just having a conversation is something that is incredibly difficult to capture within music. But in my opinion, the deep cuts on this album are the glue that holds it together. This is the album where the legendary arrangements first start for Brandy. Tracks like Have You Ever showed off Brandy's amazing ability to vocalize and arrange in the way she stacks her tracks, which is something to this day is often imitated by so many of the most famous pop stars. Brandy's arrangements on Put That On Everything are so intricate, and she has this loud backing vocals where she's yelling but not straining. And then she puts such intricate runs on top of that on the lead vocals that allow her to shine with her ability to do literal vocal backflips. So then in between Never Say Never and her third album, Moesha actually ended and Brandy laid low for a couple of years to rejuvenate herself. She actually had a mental breakdown because of how overwhelming the public attention was for her. And so she decided to take a few years off. She came back with her most vocally impressive album yet, and with even more electro-funk vibes on the album Full Moon. Full Moon was released in 2002, and Brandy jumped back in the studio with her creative partner, Darkchild. By this point, Darkchild had become one of the most sought-after producers in the game, producing hits for Destiny's Child, Kirk Franklin, NSYNC, and Toni Braxton since Brandy's second album. Looking back on reviews from critics, when the album came out, it really was a mixed bag. Some people got it, but most people actually didn't. And in my opinion, this album just didn't get a fair shake because people didn't like the fact that the R&B darling was dabbling in UK garage and electro dance music, but making it fit her voice and style. The album was super forward thinking of both Brandy and Darkchild. The compression and vocal effects on songs like Anybody in the Baraka intro are something I fawn over very often. Though Full Moon didn't receive the critical acclaim I think it deserved at the time, this era is a fan favorite. And because I think that's because of the range of genres Brandy proved she could cover in this era. Full Moon, the song, is one of the most interesting moments where Brandy manipulates her timbre on the chorus to mimic the trumpet sounds in the background that are playing. It's really nuts. And this album is the album that solidified Brandy as the vocal Bible. Multiple artists have credited this album with changing the way they approach songwriting and harmonies. So this album would set Brandy up to finally explore her full power in more experimental spaces, especially in the ambient soundscape space. So between Full Moon and Aphrodisiac, Brandy actually gave birth to her daughter and began writing for other artists like Kelly Rowland and Toni Braxton and Keeley Dean. So as she was writing for Keeley Dean, she ended up meeting up with Timbaland, and in 2004 dropped the album Aphrodisiac. She was finally able to collab with Timbaland. What came of that was her most interesting and also probably one of her best albums to date. The album is a massive step up lyrically, as now she has had a baby and experienced multiple heartbreaks, thus forcing the output to be the most adult content that Brandy had presented. The album was a pivot from the previous two albums in that while it was still authentically Brandy and her sound, she did have a bit more bite to her. She was still talking about love and heartbreak, but with so much more confidence about who she was as a person and in her vocal performance. This energy shines through most on Who Is She To You, which is about confronting a partner about cheating. She was heavily influenced by the 2000 Coldplay album Parachutes. She even mentions the band in the track I Tried and even interpolates the song Clocks, which if y'all don't know, it's the one with the crazy piano in the beginning on the song Should I Go. Production-wise, it infused the best of hip-hop music with ambient soundscapes and some funk and soul twists. Brandy and Timbaland were like a match made in heaven on this one, with her raspy voice cascading so well over his productions. Kanye West even makes an appearance here on an up-tempo funk cut called Talk About Our Love, and Aphrodisiac would go on to be Brandy's most critically acclaimed album, despite not really selling as well as the past albums. I think this is truly the upper echelon of Brandy's discography and is still something I feel is called back to into 2021. In my opinion, something like Victoria Monet's Jaguar is one of the biggest parallels to this album, and this album set the foundation for what will be considered alt R&B by the year 2014. The intro to this album, Who Am I, reminds me of something that the internet would have channeled on both Purple Naked Ladies and Ego Death. So as we've come to find out throughout this entire episode, Brandy is actually the queen of taking breaks. And so she would take 4 years before releasing another album. But during that break, she made an appearance on the show One-on-One alongside her brother Ray J, and also became a judge on the first season of America's Got Talent. She would also opt to leave Atlantic Records, saying she just wanted to move on. She decided to sign with Epic Records instead. And during this time, she was also involved in a car accident that resulted in the death of a 38-year-old mother of two. And Brandy said that this moment changed her life forever and became the reason she prays every single day. So after all that, and heading back into the studio for Human, Brandy reconnected with Darkchild to produce what I consider to be her worst album. This album lacked any real direction, and unlike any other Brandy project, she just blended in with the generic R&B landscape that was popular at the time. This album did nothing to set her apart, and that's what we've kind of known Brandy for. To me, this album is just missing Brandy's traditional voice as well. The raspy and sultry sound that she was known for was now whisper notes and very airy. Not that it was a bad take, but Brandy's regular voice had so much natural flair and sass and nice textures to it. So this album also lacked the conviction that the others seemed to have. Like, I didn't believe that she wanted her man to be with her on the lead single Right Here. The album just seemed like it was all over the place and lacked a clear musical direction. And it was also quite basic in nature and the song titles. And though there are some interesting productions like Torn Down, ultimately the album fails to connect on any real level. So after this, she would actually take another 4 year break from her own music, but score two credits on Timbaland's 2009 album Shock Value 2. And she would also create an album with her family titled Family Business that went along with Ray J's show, Ray J's Family Business. And for the sake of brevity, I'll say that this album was cute for what it was, but it was nothing special. She also would compete on Dancing the Stars and have a role on the CW's The Game, where she quickly became a series regular until its conclusion. During this time, she also ended up leaving Epic Records and Roc Nation Management and signed with Chameleon Entertainment and RCA Records. So in 2012, Brandy made her return with the album 211, and it was a return to her traditional R&B sounds with some progressive elements that she had experimented with on Aphrodisiac. This album featured her most expansive list of collaborators, specifically with songwriters, with credits from the likes of Frank Ocean and Sean Garrett. The lead single from this album is probably the weakest song of the bunch. It's Put It Down, and it features someone we don't really care to talk about. On this effort, Brandy actually effortlessly froze through a few different sounds and even has an electronica beat out here. Her vocal layering that we've come to love reappears in a big way on the ballad Without You, and the album was aptly titled after Brandy's birthday, but also the day of her mentor Whitney Houston's death. She said that 211 signified her evolution as years progressed on each birthday. I honestly think this was probably one of the greatest comeback albums of the 2010s. Mainly because I think Brandy had clear focus. She knew what she wanted to talk about, and there were so many topics for her to cover. She hadn't talked about the breakup with her fiance, Quentin Richardson. She hadn't talked about what it was like to be a single mother to her daughter. She really had a lot of source material for this album, and I think that shines through very, very well. So then Brandy took her longest break of all time, which was actually 8 years in between 211 and her latest album. And in between, she did a host of features, including my favorite Brandy feature of all time, which is Love Again with Daniel Caesar.
You don't even say what's up. Round your boys, you act so tough. Like you never been in love. If you don't quit acting up. Alone is weighing on enough. I promise. You may think that I'm crazy. You should ask around about me. Put your trust in me, baby.
She also ended up on Broadway and played Roxy Hart as part of the cast of Chicago. And she also landed a part on the hit TV series Star and won the second ever Soul Train Lady of Soul Award. Brandy would then start her own record label called Brand New Entertainment and release her latest album, aptly titled B7. Brand New was like seen as Brandy's alter ego. And this is where she would start to really infuse her rap styling and raps into music. And I've got to say, it was pretty interesting and cool to like see Brandy start rapping, which the first time she rapped and took the name Brand New was actually on Timbaland's Shock Value 2 tape. And so to see the Brand New aesthetic pop back up here and also on 211, because on Put It Down, she does do a little rap, is very cool. And I think it just adds to the abilities of Brandy. So B7 was released in July of 2020, and the album is probably her most personal one. It covers mental health, single motherhood, and of course relationships. Brandy herself said she had been working on the project for over 3 years and had been letting her life experiences inform the music she made. The album blends some of the iconic sounds we've come to love Brandy for with some hints of techno in the production. Actually, hard-hitting drums and her iconic seductive tone are still ever present, and she continues with her touches of rapping on some tracks. While this album definitely has some less than mediocre moments, tracks like Borderline and No Tomorrow remind us of the superstar that Brandy truly is. This album shows how well Brandy can integrate and adapt to what the times call for. Despite an 8-year absence, the album sounds like she hasn't missed a beat sonically and has stayed in tune with the sounds that fit 2020 and beyond. And truthfully, it's as if the sounds of today actually finally caught up to what Brandy was doing back on Aphrodisiac in 2004. In my opinion, Brandy Norwood is one of the best artists of this generation. Whether we are discussing her tone, ad-libs, or vocal texturing through layers, or the ridiculous run she's capable of, Brandy lives up to the nickname she was given 20 years ago. And while I feel like the Black community has always given her credit, the general public sometimes skips over her impact. If it weren't for Brandy's vocalizations in 2004, something like Ariana Grande's Sweetener and the vocal compositions and arrangements on that album just simply wouldn't exist. Brandy for so long has been giving masterclasses in harmonies and vocal styles. facts, and she deserves credit for changing the game. It was important for me to pick a Black artist to end Black Music Month, and I really wanted to pick an artist who I feel like can get overlooked. Brandy ruled every medium of entertainment at one point or another and simultaneously, and I think she's a phenomenal once-in-a-lifetime artist who has changed not only my life, but the entirety of the industry for the better. If you're looking to get into Brandy for the first time, I suggest starting with her debut, then listening to Full Moon and Aphrodisiac, followed by Never Say Never, 211, B7, and then lastly get into Cuban. Thank you so much for doing this deep dive into Brandy with me. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know by leaving us a review. Let me know who I should cover for the next Back Catalog episode on the Instagram page at Back Catalog Pod, catalog spelled the American way, CATALOG. Make sure you follow me on Instagram at Pablo.thedon, and make sure you follow me on TikTok as well at Pablo.thedon, all one word. Thank you so much for listening. This has been
the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don.
I get hypnotic with the moon, but you got to put me down soon. I flip a sideshow if you come my way, up, down, and around, even sideways. I'm about as ready as the light.